Well, what sort of thing are we talking about when we discuss a human person? Have you ever had an experience where a little kid, maybe 2 years old or something, is somehow discovered the family album or maybe the wedding album of their parents, and they look and there's mom and dad, and you know, there's all the aunts and uncles they've come to know and the grandparents, but they look at the picture and they go, where am I in this picture? You know, their little hearts are hurt. Like, wait, this is my family. Where am I in this picture? And, you know, depending on what's going on, you might hear something like, well, you were in mommy's tummy, you know, wink, wink, you know. Or, you know, you weren't in mommy's tummy yet. You know, you hear this sort of answer, but even little two-year-olds can tend to be a little existential, you know. It doesn't quite work, you know. Well, what do you mean I wasn't in mommy's tummy or was in mommy's tummy, you know? Where am I here? And the reason it's an unsatisfying answer is this little line that I love from Ecclesiastes. I used to really love it when I was a young evangelist. It's that God has set eternity in the hearts of women and men. A sense that though this life matters, and we're not dualists, we don't say that this life doesn't matter. Christians aren't dualists in the sense that we don't say this body doesn't matter. And that this incredible thing that happens during fertility and gestation, you know, in the womb and when a baby comes into public, so to speak, we don't even come close to saying that none of that matters. It's just that there's something transcendent, that we all seem to have this sense about us that we're an integrated body and soul. That it's like the, have you heard that phrase, warp and woof? I didn't know what it meant. I heard it my whole life. And it's actually, in the old English, it's warp and wealth. And it's about weaving. So you have horizontal and vertical, warp and wealth. And you only have a weaving when both of those things are together. And the weaving doesn't work if you don't have warp and wealth. And it's what holds it together. And humankind in the image of God is something like that. When we're aware of being both body and soul, then there's something strong and solid. And of course, this was very common for the Hebrews. They knew this. They talked about bowels of mercy. They talked about crouching in lament, or bowing and kneeling in prayer, or lying flat on the floor before God in worship. They were somehow aware that our bodies and our souls are this kind of really important whole. And so again, I just want to help you think about this morning, what do we mean when we think about Noah exists? What do we mean when we talk about existence? And of course, there are big, deep philosophical paths we could go down here that we won't, you know, all about consciousness or rationality and all that. We won't go down those paths, but I just want to suggest this to you. First, negatively, you are not a body having occasional spiritual experiences when you get goosies, you know, because the music's really good or something, right? When you become Jennifer Lopez, you know, you ever heard her say that? Oh, I got goosies. And what she means to say is, you know, some kid on American Idol sang really good. And she was having this sort of, you know, spiritual experience. Well, you're not a body having occasional spiritual experiences. You're essentially a spiritual being who has a body because that's the way God intended humankind to exist. And therefore, these bodies are good. But if you look at the psalm we read this morning, there's some stunning information in this psalm about the nature of existence. You knit me together in my mother's womb. Your eyes saw my unformed body. All the days ordained for me were written in your book before one of them came to be. So try this on for size. You existed before you were born. Right? How can God know something that doesn't exist? How can he say, I knew you before you were formed in your mother's womb, if you're not a thing? Now, so just hold on to that thought for a minute. Before you had physicality, you were an entity who could be known and was in fact known by God. So before you became material, that is to say, have flesh and blood and bones and organs and that sort of thing, you were an entity who existed in God's consciousness before you had what we now call consciousness. Now, I know some of you are saying, okay, that's an interesting little bit of philosophy, but hold on. Now, there comes a time when in God's wisdom and plan, we take on physicality. And if you look at Jeremiah 1, the passage we read there, again, we have very similar language. Before I formed you in the womb, I knew you. Now, again, I just want you to try to sit with that. I know it's a Sunday morning. We don't want to do philosophy on a Sunday morning, but you just sit with that for a second. You deal with that however you can. Before I formed you in your mother's womb, I knew you. And in Jeremiah's case, before you were born, I set you apart. I appointed you as a prophet to the nations. Now, prophetness is not the takeaway from this passage. The important takeaway from this passage is the issue of set apartness or appointedness. That's the issues that are here, not a certain role like being a prophet. What's at issue here is something like that when God causes a Noah to be born, he causes them to be born, a Noah or a Nicole to be born, so that they can find their place in his kingdom. It's that set apartness and appointedness that's clear here. And so I think this is helpfully talked about in terms of something like a creation covenant. And I mean that in quotes, because I don't think we can call creation a formal covenant, but let's just call it in quotes, kind of a creation covenant. That is to say that humankind are meant to function in a conscious relationship that's marked by interactive responsibility with God. Now again, sorry for a couple of big words there, but hear it again. To be a consciously alive human being means from the plan of God to live in conscious interactivity with him that's marked by a mutual responsibility. And I think even if you can't quite get your brain wrapped around that this morning, just think of something really deep in you. Some of your deepest longings are to create good, whether it's good art, or like my wife, good meals, or like a poet, good poetry. There's something deep in every human being, unless there's, you know, some fundamental flaw, and of course there is fundamental brokenness in some of us, but unless you have really deeply fundamental brokenness, there's something in all of us to matter. And not just to matter in terms of fame, I mean, that's kind of the deal today, but for most people, it's to count for good. And I think this gets at our inner DNA. And then lastly, I mean, think of the gospel reading that Todd read to us this morning. If you've ever wondered how Jesus could do what he did, how was he legendarily patient? How was he unspeakably kind? Why was he not afraid at the arrest in the garden? Why didn't he tremble before Pilate? How did he not get angry and smack the Roman soldiers around who were smacking him around? How does he submit himself to cross? And this is where, this is the payoff moment. This is what you guys got to get. This is precisely where what felt like philosophy 5 minutes ago becomes radically important Christian spirituality. Look at your gospel text. Jesus, knowing he had come from God, Psalm 139, Jeremiah 1. Jesus, knowing he had come from the Holy Trinity and knowing that he was going back, that is to say, knowing he had ultimate power, never-ending conscious existence. It answers the question, what did ultimate power do with his power? He took off his outer garments, he wrapped a towel around his waist, and he washed his disciples' feet. How do you do that kind of stuff? How do you be conscious today in the fears and anxieties and hopes and joys of your life and your world? Is that you wrestle this to the ground of your heart. You wrestle to the ground of your deepest soul that you were known by God before you were a little Noah. And you were put in place to live in a conscious, interactive relationship with him. And the place you come from is where you're going. You're having trouble setting life's priorities? Sit with that for the next week. And you'll begin to see a whole new sense of what life has come to be. Well, the Bible sort of wraps this story up by saying that not only were you known before you had a body, and now having a temporary body containing this spirit, and again, we can't go too far down that road, but the Bible says in the life to come, you'll be re-embodied. That you're not just going to cease existing, but that you, what's really going on here is that you're a never-ceasing spiritual being with an incredible eternal destiny in God's great universe. That as Paul said, you're heirs with Christ and will be glorified with him. As Paul said in Philippians, you will one day have a glorified body like that of Jesus. Or if you get right to the end of our story, Revelation 22:5 says that you're going to rule and reign with God forever and ever in the new heavens and the new earth. So as we come to dedicate to God this little life this morning, again, what sort of things are we talking about when we discuss the human person? Well, I love this quote from Lewis in The Weight of Glory. Some of you probably heard it, where Lewis says, there are no ordinary people. You have never talked to a mere mortal. Nations, cultures, arts, civilizations, these are mortal. And catch this, and their life is to ours as the life of a gnat. But it's immortals whom we joke with, work with, marry, snub, and exploit. Immoral horrors or everlasting splendors. So as we turn now to celebrate and dedicate to God Noah and receive him into this community of faith, and as we begin to ask God's blessing on him and Scott and Alyssa, we do so mindful that Noah is no mere mortal. That he, like all of us, is a never-ceasing spiritual being with an eternal destiny in God's great renewed universe. Us too. It actually is true that before you were conscious of your existence, God was paying attention to you. Can you just sit with that for a second? Before you came through the birth canal and into the waiting hands of a human being, God was paying attention to you. Before you were ever conscious of it, he was caring for you, protecting you. He brought you into being to function in a conscious relationship with him. The tough part is, now that we're conscious, which is obviously both a good and bad thing, it's just that now consciousness includes for us worry, anxiety, fear, self-judgment, and we can begin to lose focus of who cared for us and who will care for us in the renewed cosmos. But in this embodied life, we fret. And the invitation this morning is this, as Peter said, knowing where you've come from and knowing the end of this story, cast all your cares upon him, for he cares for you. Be still, as the psalmist said, and know that I am your creator and your sustainer God. Amen.